Welcome. I want to start by giving you a little introduction about my guest today, Susan Frentzen. Not only a great friend, a fellow change maker, but I see her as an extraordinary individual who has really dedicated her life in helping individuals and organizations to bring a gap between purpose, passion, and profit. With her diverse background and a wealth of experience, she has become a trusted consultant, author, and an advocate for building a harmonious connection between personal fulfillment and professional success. Drawing from her upbringing, where I really wanted to dwell into her insights, where she experienced a lack of love and acceptance, Susan developed a deep understanding of the challenges individuals face in finding the true path. This drove her to embark on a mission to guide companies and corporations in aligning their values and their business strategies, fostering environments, prioritizing emotional intelligence, and personal growth. As the founder and CEO of her consultancy firm, Susan leverages her unique insights and transformative programs to empower leadership teams to unlock their full potential. Her work centers around creating a bridge between purpose, passion, and profit, enabling individuals to achieve remarkable results while experiencing genuine fulfillment in their endeavors. Susan's experience extends to various sectors. Her ability to navigate and pressures demands on these high-profile environments, she has earned a reputation for helping clients thrive and excel in the representative fields. Notably, Susan is also an accomplished author with her best-selling children's book, capturing readers worldwide, and her special director's manuals for leaders. Through her writing, she impacts invaluable lessons of self-acceptance, resilience, and pursuing one's dreams, inspiring children and adults alike to embrace their uniqueness and true potential. Driven by a passion for empowerment and growth, Susan continues to make a lasting impact on individuals and organizations. Her unwavering belief in the power of purpose and emotional intelligence serves as a guiding force in her work, allowing her clients to overcome self-sabotage, tap into their untapped potential, and ultimately create lives and careers that are both meaningful and successful. I got Susan on this call and in my book because I feel she is the story of testament to the transformative power of self-awareness, authenticity, and purpose-driven leadership. Through her unwavering commitment to helping others, she embodies leadership principles beyond gender, empowering individuals to break free from social construct and create a new paradigm of success and fulfillment. So welcome, Susan.
Wow. Thank you, Runa. Quite an introduction. Yeah.
Well, here you are.
That person, right?
Sorry?
I would love to meet that person, right?
Well, you are that person. You are that person to me anyway. And I know for, I mean, hundreds if not thousands of people out there. Let's dive into this. You got a question? You got a question?
No.
Okay, let's just go onward over the whole thing. Now, I find your journey of overcoming adversity and finding purpose so truly inspiring. How you have been able to embrace change as an opportunity for growth. Can you share how your upbringing and social conditioning, feeling unloved and unaccepted, have influenced your perspective on embracing change as an opportunity for growth?
Well, it's a big question, right? And I would like to start with a story where, you know, the photographer is making the pictures in the darkness, right? So I think we're all created in the darkness. That is the first step of manifestation, is to experience the contrast of life.
Mm-hmm.
Because doing that, we are called upon expanding from within, from, you know, holding the space for ourselves and the contrast and the heaviness and all the bad stuff the ego would judge it by, right? But as I usually say, the soul is laughing all the way to the bank. It's only the ego mind that is annoyed by the process, right?
Yeah.
So my choice as a soul was to incarnate in a family where I was able to experience the feeling of not being wanted and not being loved. And not to judge my parents, I think they did the very best job they could with their upbringing and their backpack. But that was my experience. And as we all navigate through life as children, small children, we navigate, how can I, you know, get the most out of what is available? How can I get love? Either conditioned love or unconditional love. We would love the latter, but seldom is it available. So we would, you know, settle for the conditional love. And in my story, I chose, or I, you know, I perceived that I should play within the box that I saw in my experience, right? So I grew up to be a pleaser, avoiding conflicts, being the good girl and the very talented, intelligent girl who did well in school, who did well in spare time, who also cleaned the house before parents came back home, right? So I was all of it. And I never took a period of being a rebel as a teenager.
No.
I never saw that there would be space for me doing that.
Yeah.
So I was really constricted in that box of mine. And it's a perceivement, because I was never told to do this, mm-hmm. but it was something that I, you know, looked around and saw, okay, this is whom I am supposed to be in order for this to be the best possible way, right? So that was my environment. And I grew up and I studied hard, and I took my master's degree in strategic management as well in the business school, and all these excess studies, you know, psychology and stuff like that. And I really was settled well within the corporate world. I did well. I had a nice job. I was sitting on the board of directors the last 6 years of that period. But also at a parallel alley, I was waking up to that more holistic approach in life, which I think when you are fostered in that container and being so restricted in a box, at some point you reach a point where you're not so much in contact with yourself. Mm-hmm. You are outer steered, outer guided, and loses your inner GPS signal, right? So on my journey on finding myself again, to return back to my essence, I was very interested in everything holistical. So I had a deep dive in my own personal life. For instance, I had three divorces along the way, right? Which I might say might be the best developmental course you can ever take. It three times, right? Because you really get deep into so who am I, you know, who am I, and who am I thinking that I am? What is the social construct that has been my reality? So after 12, 13 years in the corporate world, I decided to break free of that. And become an entrepreneur and pioneer with this within this paradigm shifting. Mm-hmm. So I've experienced both. I've experienced the contrast in my personal life. I've experienced the contrast in the corporate life of seeing how things. I mean, we only use half our powers on a good day in the old paradigm. So
if we do half, yeah.
As a management consultant, I remember a workshop I did for 30 leaders, and supposedly it was on how can we improve processes and the organizational landscape, right? But what I soon realized was that I don't have a mandate in going really deep within the personal sphere as well, we cannot change the rest.
Yeah.
Because otherwise it would just be treating the symptom, right?
Yeah.
And in my perspective, this problem of gender, this problem of racism, this problem of anything that is not whole is a symptom of us not being whole.
Yeah.
So it's a journey, a hero journey towards wholeness within us. And I don't think you can read this in a book. I've tried to do it twice, right? But you can only really integrate it on a cellular level, by walking the path yourself.
Yeah. So, and experiencing that. Yeah, exactly. Now, let's stick with embracing change as an opportunity for growth. And in your work with companies and corporations, you are helping them bridging the gap between purpose, passion, and profit. How do you see the principles of leadership beyond genders playing a role in fostering a culture of embracing change and growth in these organizations?
It's a hard question, and I never asked myself that before. So here goes, right? I really think that it is important, it's vitally important that every organization realizes that this is a group of people, right? Individuals who bring their shit to the table. and as a leader as well, we bring shit to the table, right? Yeah. So we need self-awareness around, so what am I bringing into this? Because as long as I'm not self-aware about what I'm bringing and what everybody else is bringing, I cannot hold space for diversity.
Mm-hmm.
And I cannot, and in not doing that, I am, you know, disregarding bits and pieces of me and everybody else so that they don't have the contact to their full manifesting powers, right?
Yeah.
So they would only be half-brained and half-hearted. And it would never get us into walking our path. And I think one big thing that companies and individuals should realize is that we are not competitive.
Mm.
You know, we're not competing with each other.
No. Well, we are.
Yes, but it's an illusion. It's an illusion, because if everybody, every individual tap into their personal contribution and purpose, life purpose, and every organization would realize that this is a group of unique talents and our collective purpose is serving humanity, is serving everybody in this unique way, that we are not really competing with each other. We would be able to cut away so much wasted energy that we use thinking, believing that we are competing. So that is, you know, one thing is finding that bliss zone in each person. I remember, and I know you have the passion test certification as well. I remember Janet Atwood telling about a company in Mexico, I believe. I think they were 250 people. And then they were exposed to this passion test process. And after that, they fired 100 people, I think.
Wow.
But made even greater results with 150 people because they were aligned.
Yes.
They were on target.
Yeah.
They were self-leading.
Yeah.
In that field of common purpose, right? So I think we should really do our best to do that inner work and to spread it out and see, so how can we contribute to this humanity with what our unique talents. So that's one way. And I think a stepping stone to going there would be to let go of that doing.
Mm-hmm.
That we have a tendency to always want to create better results per quarter, yeah. Right? That we should also balance it with the being, you know.
Yeah.
It's called human being for a reason, I think.
Yeah.
Not called human doing. So when we tap into that natural state of being, what we would experience is a greater flow and a greater access to inspired action. And then you can tap into this, you know, this source of infinite innovative creativity if you do that. But you cannot do it the other way around.
No.
So we have to really get that balance, and we have to realize that it's not serving anybody by always being in the doing, right? And the most innovative companies anyway, Silicon Valley, to take one place where they are really a lot of those companies, right, that live on their creativity and ability to be innovative, yeah. Right? They have created workspaces where you have a pendulum between the doing and the being, because it's in the being state that all the great ideas come down to people, right?
Yeah.
So it would really be, you know, not good if all the great ideas came when people are at home, right? Because yeah. It would be great ideas about other things, right? Mm-hmm. So we need to create a space, a culture where we can be allowed to do this.
Yeah,
exactly. I know it's hard because I've been working with a accountants company since 14, and we have created the physical space for this to unfold. But in this, you know, line of business, being an accountant, they are very hard driven. I mean, they have so much epigenetic inherited as a business line that it's really hard, even though we say it again and again and again, take a power nap, take a break, yeah. Go for a walk, right? It's something that people have a hard time doing.
Yeah, it's their habit. It's what yeah. They, yeah, they're, like you're saying, it's like they're hardwired for that.
Yeah.
So when we talk about cultures and innovation, fostering a culture of innovation and adaptability, your focus has been on increasing emotional intelligence within leadership team. And it's quite remarkable. Can you provide insights into how breaking free from the traditional gender roles, thinking of that, and biases can enhance creativity, collaboration, and the ability to adapt to new challenges? We're really living in a rapidly changing world.
I've never really focused on gender, I must admit. I'm much more focused on energies.
Mm.
And in my perspective, we have an inner woman. She's the being part of us. Mm. And we have an inner man who's the doing part of us. And we have an inner child who's connected to joy and pleasure, right? And yeah. And we have all these elements within us.
Yeah.
But if we're brought up in a culture and we're conditioned into just being in very good contact with the inner man, right, we have secluded an important part and the way, you know, the inspirational channel of ours is sort of blocked.
Yeah.
So we need to open that up. And as we do so, as we reintegrate every part of ourselves and we hold space for every part of ourselves, we would never, ever be tricked by somebody else being different out here.
No.
Never.
No.
So when we are inclusive within our inner life, we can be inclusive in our outer life. And then gender is just, you know, as important as saying, so I'm wearing a green and white dress yeah. today, and you're wearing a, is it black and blue?
Black and beige, yeah.
So it's just a fact. You know, gender is just a fact. It's just not necessarily something that would have any say.
So really being able to give yourself space and hold the space for yourself to be all of that you are will take you beyond that gendered conversation that women are doing it this way and men are doing it that way, but really going from, okay, I have all of that in me and more, and how can I, that's quantum leadership. Yes. Yeah. Yes.
And what characterizes these accountants in that firm I've been working with for almost 10 years now is that these are still primarily men, mm-hmm. but it's men who are in good contact with their inner woman.
Yeah, right. you can look at it that way. Yeah, exactly. Or would it be maybe if we take that, I'm just speculating when you say that, is it just men who are in good contact with their source?
I would call it, you know, we talk about empaths,
yeah.
who are sensitive to energies and the surroundings, that would probably be the description. And, you know, yeah. we can find those in both genders. So I don't think I've been in a workplace where I was among a lot of men. But it's never really bothered me, and I've never thought of myself as having to be in a specific way because I was a woman.
Yeah.
I've never seen it as a problem.
Exactly. And which is so interesting. And you coming from Denmark, me being here in Iceland, and I think that has been part of our social conditioning, to have that freedom. But I want to go into overcoming resistance and managing change effectively, because change often meets resistance.
Yeah.
And yes. I often thought about, if we've been told, I think there is not a person on this planet that has not been told that change is hard. It's hard to change your habits or rituals or whatever it is. Yeah. And I often wondered that energetically, how it has been carved into stone, just saying that repeatedly to yourself, change is hard. What would have happened if we would have been raised with the idea that change is easy?
Yeah, and life is happening for me, not against me.
Exactly. Yeah. This is happening for me. It's such a good actually, not to me, being the victim. Mm-hmm. But let's go for, okay, so change often meets resistance, and leaders are playing a crucial role in managing this process. Now, mm-hmm. I want to go. When I say leaders and change, I'm talking about your personal change. I'm talking about you as a, you as a leader in your life. And I'm also talking about how that reflects to your work. Yeah. Being yeah. a leader doesn't necessarily have to be the role, that, you know, like the job role, but more just you're leading what you're doing. Mm-hmm. How can you help leaders navigate resistance and foster an inclusive environment where everyone feels valued and heard, regardless?
Can I draw something? Yeah. Can I draw something here?
Yeah.
Yeah. Because I would like to introduce you and everybody else to Theory U by Otto Scharmer.
Yeah.
I find that a useful framework for understanding the mechanics of change.
Yeah.
Can you see all yeah. of
it? Yeah, not all of it. I can see the, yeah. Okay, now I can see all of it.
Good. So he uses the U as a metaphor for the change process.
Mm-hmm.
And the purpose is to come down here in the bottom where you're connected with source energy.
Mm-hmm.
Where you always have clarity on, so what is my next best step? What is calling for me? What is calling for us from the future? So that is when I'm talking about earlier on the inspirational action.
Yeah.
That you can access down here where you're connected to source. And we would all love to, you know, be there, right? But to get down there, we would have to face what he calls our downloading. I'm just going to choose another pen here.
Yeah, I think you should.
Is that clearer?
Yeah.
So downloading is all the conditional programming that we have been receiving, both in our upbringing, in our culture, but also as an epigenetic inheritance from, you know, earlier.
These are our boxes that we put. We are either put in or we put ourselves in. Yeah.
And the first step in letting go of that is to open our mind.
Yeah.
Meaning accepting that my story might not be the whole truth and nothing but the truth.
Yeah, right? Exactly.
Okay, maybe there is another version of the truth. That's step one.
Mm-hmm.
Step two is to open my heart.
Yeah.
Into sensing, you know, that inner GPS and be inner guided and to peel off all of the layers, all the scar tissue around my heart represented by the ego mind, right? It's all protected. That's our survival strategies, all our traumas and shocks. So I need to open that up and be with whatever I'm feeling. You have to feel it to heal it.
Yeah.
So don't bypass the feeling part, which is, you know, in the old paradigm, it's unprofessional to bring feelings to the table. I had a women's circle last night, and one of the female leaders, she told about a situation where she's been, you know, running a big event and it was really successful. And then she came to the board of directors and her leader was there and she was there and everybody else. And he did not mention it by one word. And she could feel the anger from within, right? And when she was then asked, so how went it? Instead of just, you know, telling about the success stories and love. And she became very emotional. She became angry. She became sad. She became everything. And after this meeting, her boss, you know, put her aside saying, next time, don't show so many emotions, right? So it's not acceptable to bring your emotional side to the work table. But that's a pity because it also shuts down so many other things if you cannot. So that's the open heart. And then there is the saying yes to the new. Open will.
Yeah.
Same. Right.
Yeah.
And you know, well, okay, I can do that. The problem is that once you make a change, whether it be in your personal life or in an organization where more people are in different places at the same time, as a leader, you have to realize that once people are at the open mind level, that could be that maybe, you know, the downloading was the old strategy and the new thing would be the new strategy, right? So people would have to open their mind to doing things in a new way, right? They also would have to feel the emotions, maybe the fear of being let go. And they would also have to say yes instead of seeking new adventures another place, right? At this level, you would enter within your inner dialogue. You would enter the voice of judgment. And that is the voice telling you to stay put where you are.
Yeah.
Some
people shake that boat.
No, and some people even say, if you know, my mind will fall out if I change my story, right?
Yeah. What will happen to me? So it's such a big part of your identity, your personal identity. Yeah.
And once you get by this, past this one, you get into the voice of cynicism. That is a really, you know, hard inner voice that might say things like, you know, you haven't deserved this, or you cannot do this, or this is not for you, or are you even good enough at doing, you know, really a hard criticize inner voice. And at the open will level, you would encounter the voice of fear. And that is the last, you know, handbrake for the ego mind to avoid this change, because change is coming down here, right? So the body, you know, your subconscious mind would really release a lot of stress hormones in this phase of the process.
Yeah.
So you would feel like there is a tiger after you, and you just feel like running away, right?
Yeah.
Or like, I'm going to die now. And it's very real within the person.
Yeah.
It feels like dying. It feels like dying. So down here, we could call it the ego death, or the small death, because it really feels like that. Mm-hmm. And what characterizes this phase is letting go.
Mm-hmm.
Letting go of whatever was.
Mm.
And down here, I'm in zero, right? There's nothing there. It's like if I buy a new sofa, I remove the old and there's nothing there. There's nothing. There's nothing but a crack. Like in Iceland, you said you have earthquakes, you have cracks, right? So there is a crack, and there is a feeling of no longer and not yet.
Yeah.
Which can be very frustrating to the ego mind. Again, the soul is...
It reminds me of when going through NLP help. This is exactly what happens when you go through deep training, where your neuroscience, your neuro pathways are being... It's that all of a sudden, then what am I supposed to be doing now?
Yeah.
And listen to what I'm saying. Doing?
Yeah.
Interesting.
So this is a frustrating place to be.
Yeah.
Because we're so attuned to this doing, as you're saying, right? We've never just, you know, just be with it. Just be with it.
Yeah.
If you don't know what to do, don't do anything.
Yeah.
Await the inspired action.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So once you've let something go, you can let something new in. So over here, it's letting come. Letting the new come in. And at first, it would be a, what do you call that? A seed that you plant. Yeah. A new thought. A new thought would be a new seed, right? Mm-hmm. So you plant it, you water it, it gets the sunlight and everything. So it gets matured in this. And up here, it suddenly starts flowering, manifesting itself so that you can harvest the fruit of the change process.
Yeah, beautiful.
So when Sharma, he told me about this, he also shared a story about two blind newborn kittens. Mm-hmm. And they put a wagon on one of the blind kittens and put the other blind kitten on the wagon.
Mm-hmm.
So they moved around this way the first 10, 11, 12 days. And what happened was the one pulling the wagon would get its eyesight, whereas the one on the wagon would remain blind.
Oh.
And this is just to emphasize the importance of, once you are at a individual or organizational point of A and you want to go to B, you cannot throw a bridge from A to B directly.
Yeah.
You need this process in order for people not to stay blind.
Yeah.
it would not be integrated in the personal cellular level or in the organizational culture.
Yeah.
So actual change would not happen if you do not allow this. And as a leader, you know, running a team, you would have team members at every point of this.
Yeah.
When I do one-on-one sessions, my biggest task is to hold space for a you process during the session.
Yeah.
To actually facilitate that people go through them all. And a good leader can do that fast. But you must not jump over one phase.
You need to clear, I mean, when you look at it from the boxes yep. methodology, it's really about to be able to go from A to B and from the what is and to what you want to be, you need to look into your box, see what needs to be taken out of that box that is no longer serving beliefs, habits, rituals, the things that are basically chucked in there just because it's always been done that way or whatever that is. So to create that open mind, to be able to open your heart and be willing to do the change that is needed, then you can actually start to either expand that box and or create a new one that is a new good box. So what you're doing, I quite like that. It's really is another way of seeing changes and how you do this.
And it brings joy into the change process.
I agree with you. Yeah.
And you know the phases. I remember a CEO coming here for a period of time, maybe over a year or something. At some point he was nagging about I haven't moved myself, you know, I'm still there.
Yeah.
And I, as a coach, was interested in, so what is your inner dialogue right now?
Yeah.
And that question revealed that where he has earlier on been in voice of judgment, he was in voice of fear at the moment where he asked. Right. So he was almost there. Almost there. And it will always feel the heaviest and the darkest and the most frustrated just before dawn. Right.
That's a good thing one of the gifts then that you can see in being in that space is that, hey, you're about to go to where you want. It's the same thing, like the saying of you need to go to the bottom in order to have something to push you up again. Yeah. It's many, many phrases around that really meets the eye here.
That is a quantum leap. When you do this, it creates a sound quantum leap.
Sound quantum leap. Exactly.
So
how beautiful.
And a change would probably involve more use, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Right. So
and to be able then for you internally to be able to see people for who they are, not with the filter that we already have because of our biases, because of our conditions, because of our experience, but being able to see people as their coreness. You have to go through that.
Yeah.
For sure. To be able to just open up for that, yeah, those unconscious biases. It takes a lot of courage to go through this process.
It does. And I remember sitting in the board, I was witnessing these strategy processes and these change processes. And what I realized was that sometimes it happened that, you know, the little wheel, you know, the leadership group is a small wheel and it turns fast. You know, we get through this fast. And once we then, you know, promote it into the rest of the organization, it's a bigger wheel that needs to start turning and to go through this process. And sometimes the leadership wheel would stop itself and say, nothing is happening. You know, we need a new change. We need to start a new process.
Yeah.
And the organization, shit, what's happening? You know, we're doing it, right?
Yeah.
And it gets confused. So the leadership wheel has to be patient and realize that, you know, we have to take every step of the way. We cannot make a shortcut.
No.
The shortcut will present itself as a lack of results at a later point, you know.
Yep, absolutely. I have one, actually two questions. So in a world where we can access leadership beyond gender, how can leaders cultivate empathy and understanding that to create safe space for individuals to embrace change? How does this contribute to their personal and professional growth? I know another big one.
Yes, and maybe I don't understand it fully, but I can say something about emotional intelligence, what the cornerstones are in these, because if we are emotional intelligent, we would just include everything. We wouldn't be triggered, we wouldn't be biased, we would be open in our mind and our heart and our will, right? Mm-hmm. And we would be connected with inspirational action, and we would follow our higher flow, and we would trust the process, right? So that's why it's so important, vitally important, that we work on this emotional intelligence. And actually reports by Daniel Goleman shows that your results as a company would decrease 390% if the leaders are lacking emotional intelligence. So it can be measured.
Yeah.
It's not just, you know, feely, feely.
Exactly. It's not airy fairy. On that note, my last question, for anyone who is either listening to this or will be reading this in the book Leadership Beyond Gender, what would you give them? What are the maybe 2-3 steps, concrete steps that they can take today to be a leader that can lead through change and innovation internally and externally?
I could actually mention more than three, but the first cornerstone in emotional intelligence is your self-awareness.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really, really important that you work on that. I met with a large company in Denmark maybe half a year ago. We were talking about them using me as a company coach. And the reason why we did not make such a deal was that they had leaders who did not want to talk emotions.
Mm-hmm.
And I was kind of like, sorry, guys, not the right match. Yeah. Because that shows to me that person is not willing to step into self-awareness.
Yeah.
Right. So, yeah. So that is vitally important, that you do your inner work, right? And in doing so, you would also gain a deep level of self-control.
Mm-hmm.
And that would be important for creating a safe space for everybody to be who they are.
Yeah.
And if you cannot create that, you know, culture eats strategy for lunch, as Peter Drucker said, mm-hmm. right? If you cannot create a culture in which people feel a certain level of psychologically safe,
mm-hmm.
they will only share bits and pieces with you. And the results would be much worse instead of people just thriving and making the contribution. And we need a diverse group of people, because we have the glasses that we were brought up with. So we need a lot of glasses to see more of the whole. No one person can do that. And it's not good for the culture and the results if you choose people who are like you, you know?
Yeah. That awareness is such a big one as well. Yeah, sure.
So I think that would, yeah, just work on yourself. Get to know what are your constructs. You know, have a personal coach that become that mirror. And look at your results. I mean, your results right now is a reflection upon your inner world. So if you meet a lot of idiots, sorry.
Hello.
No, in which case you have, you know, you have defragmented parts of yourself and you need to reintegrate that. You need to take care of your inner harmonious wedding, because, you know, between your inner man and your inner woman and your inner child. If you can bring harmony into yourself, you can bring harmony without you. So do that.
It
sounds easy. It isn't. It isn't something you do in a weekend. But get started. Get started and trust the process and be patient with the slowest part of you. Be patient with the slowest part of you, because as you have to create the psychologically safety in a team, so too is true in your inner queendom or your inner kingdom, that the parts of you that has been deeply traumatized, they also need to be safe to pop up. So be patient with the slowest part of yourself. So you need to move that feminine energy, right, of being, the being state. And when I say feminine and masculine, it's energy forms, it's not genders.
Yeah, being, just being and doing. In the energy form of being or doing, to take the label of of genders into it. Yeah, exactly.
So enjoy.
Susan, thank you so very much for this very insightful journey.
You're welcome. It was a pleasure.
To really integrate change and with, well, not only innovation, but inspiring innovation by being yourself.
Yeah.
Thank you.